Well, hello, Money Pennies. Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode, we will be discussing nothing but Bond, James Bond. Let's get on with the show. My name is Peterson, Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow hoes, Amanda. I'm sorry, is it Sink Amanda? Sink?
Yeah, Sink. Amanda Sink. Like your kitchen sink.
Okay. Heinrichs Troy. Heinrichs?
I'm five martinis in already.
Can you imagine doing that your whole life? Like, why do you always have to throw your own last name out first, man? It just feels so unnecessary.
He's got a good last name.
And the villains do it. It's the villain's fault. Mr. Bond.
No, he does it. He goes anywhere and somebody's like, hey, what's up? My name's Jacob. Oh, I'm Bond. James Bond. If I was Jacob, I'd be like, I didn't ask you. I said, my name's Jacob, bitch. What's your name? James? Okay.
Can we talk about how clever it is, though, that they always find... It's not as aggressive as I feel like the older movies used to be about Bond, James Bond. Now it's like, he's checking into a hotel. So what's your name, sir? Bond. James Bond. You know, it's not as in your face, but they still manage to tie it in there.
Well, yeah. It could be an accent thing, too, you know?
This movie is very much like trying to have some fun with it, too, I think, when they use it. But what,
for sure.
Hold off on No Time to Die. No Time to Die is going to be at the end of the episode, so there's lots of other stuff, but this is a James Bond-focused episode. There's nothing here that isn't James Bond-related. So if you hate James Bond, what is wrong with you? And also, you probably go listen to one of the thousands of other episodes we have on something else.
Does that mean I can leave too?
No. Mm-mm. Oh, no, shoot. You have to suffer.
Man.
That's how this works.
When's the laser coming to my crotch? That's what I want to know.
So, no, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die. Which is silly. Kill him already. I mean, every movie, literally, the villain has to talk him to death. If I was him, I'd just be like, please, just end it.
That happens in so many movies, though. They have a conversation and there's hesitation, especially in revenge movies. They have to stop and remind them what they did, which gives them a chance to get free or hurt them back instead of just murdering them. You know what they did?
Yeah.
It's the trope.
What?
It's the trope.
Standard trope.
You have to give your villain speech before you actually execute your plan.
I don't understand it. You know what I would do? I would just be like, killed you. Next. I mean, I don't really... I feel like that would be the end of my movie. I would have the shortest revenge plot ever.
What they did in The Princess Bride and just say, you killed my father, prepare to die. And then you kill them. And then it's fine.
Is it Count Dracula in your version of Princess Bride? That's what I'm hearing.
Look, I'm sick. I have bronchitis.
Also, is he going to die if he's preparing to die? Doesn't it take another 25, 30 minutes before he actually dies?
But at least then you're not giving them the opportunity to get away. You're just like, I'm here to kill you. You're going to die. And then you just start attacking.
Okay, so here's how it's going to break down. We're going to first start. Now, we're going to have a James Bond battle royale. We're not going to do what you expect, though. We're not going to do the one where we're going to go bond by bond and break that down, the existing bonds, because I think we all know who the best one is.
There's no point.
We'll get there. But what we are going to do is have a battle royale for who the next Bond should be. Oh, too soon? Too bad. So we're going to have a battle royale for who the next James Bond will be. First, we're going to talk about the existing bonds up until Daniel Craig, obviously. And then we're going to do the battle royale. Then we're going to talk about No Time to Die. So that is our James Bond episode. Everybody ready?
Ready.
I'm ready, M.
First question. When was the first time you remember being exposed to James Bond?
License to Kill?
Timothy Dalton, huh? That was your first one? Dalton?
I believe so.
So mine is actually going to, I don't know, probably disappoint a lot of people. That I can remember, it doesn't mean that I wasn't exposed previously, but I specifically remember the 1999 Tomorrow Never Dies video game on PlayStation. And I remember playing that a lot. I have no idea why. I don't have any other memories from 1999, but it was just a game that I remember having a lot of fun with.
Hmm.
Yeah. I presume I saw the movie that came out a couple years before that, but I can't confirm because my memory is just...
I didn't see that coming. It's a little early. I remember watching...
I know, right?
I think it was Goldfinger or Thunderball with my grandfather. And I remember my mother saying she didn't want to watch it because she doesn't like James Bond because he's too much of a misogynist.
I mean, that tracks.
Fair statement.
Yeah. She lived up to it because I just rented a whole theater for my dad to see No Time to Die. I wanted to see it in a theater with my dad, and we had the whole theater. Then you don't have to worry about certain things, right, that are going on. And my mom didn't even come. It was for like his birthday, 70th birthday, big deal. And she's like, nah, I don't want to go. I thought that was kind of amazing. She sticks to her guns.
So you're saying your first entrance to James Bond was an Octopussy?
No, but what a title when I was a kid. Love that title. I was like, what is this going to be? It's got to be HBO Late at Night or Skinamax, right? Nah, that was just the title. I can't believe they got away with it, to be honest.
Honestly, yeah, me either. But it was the 80s, so.
God bless them. That was bold. I respect them.
And I take back my statement. It was a view to a kill with Roger Moore, right?
That's a huge difference, man. That's Roger Moore.
I know.
Okay. That's
trying to remember the title of the movie.
Duran Duran's hit song.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was 1985. I remember the year. I just couldn't remember which year that movie was.
Okay.
A View to a Kill.
Let's hop in the old time machine. See, we're going to go back and we're going to start from the beginning. We're going to go through all of the James Bonds. And there's even a couple you might not even realize were James Bond, but we're going to mention them anyway. So here we go. We're going to start with the greatest, I would say, according to most people. According to our listener poll, which will be the de facto Battle Royale, by a 4-1 margin, Sean Connery is the favorite James Bond. So Daniel Craig is close-ish, way back, but Sean Connery still, he's the GOAT. He's Tom Brady of James Bonds.
Do you agree with that statement, though? I mean...
Do I agree with which part of the statement?
Well, just because he's the original. Like, people, like, you assume that the original is always the best. So do you automatically cloud your judgment over the other Bonds, or was he really just that good? And was he actually really the same character as Fleming's books?
He is by far the best James Bond. He's the most overall, in terms of a complete character, the best James Bond. And I did read the books. He's a fair representation. He doesn't look perfectly like described. I mean, Daniel Craig probably has more of the look and the steely eyes and whatnot, but Sean Connery had that too. He was just better with a quip. He was better with the ladies. He was just overall better, if you ask my honest opinion. He was more fun to watch. Would you not agree with that? You don't agree with that?
I'm just wondering if it's a product of the time, because if you would take that same kind of style.
I rewatched all of them, man. He's still, like, if I was a woman, I get why he's so lucky. You know? I mean, Daniel Craig, I don't understand how that works, because I love Daniel Craig, but he's not, other than when he's shirtless, I don't see it.
He does have some great muscles, though.
But when he's on a shirt, he looks good in a suit and everything, I guess. But he's not like...
He does.
He doesn't have the same kind of features that Pierce Brosnan has or Sean Connery has. You know, he's not that extremely typical Hollywood handsome that you expect.
Correct. That's true. Yeah, so I mean, if you're playing it off on the fact of the ladies and the skills and the charm, then yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's just everything that makes James Bond James Bond. Yes, yes. if you're focusing on that, he's better at it. I agree.
I'm just saying, like, just from a devil's advocate perspective, do we, like, look at Connery through, like, rose-colored glasses sometimes?
Like I said, I did read the books. I do think Craig really has that, the blue-gray eyes, he has that, much more stone-cold killer aspect. But Connery had he was the overall package. He set the bar and created this character that has basically become iconic. And I feel like every other actor is just trying to do their own version of Sean Connery. I would say that Craig probably has done the most to separate and do his own thing. I don't necessarily think that's the best of all time either. So, I mean, I don't know. I feel like he got too far from the character in many aspects, my personal opinion.
Interesting.
That's just my personal opinion. But here's Sean Connery's films, just so you know. He started playing James Bond in 1962 with Dr. No, then in 1963 From Russia with Love, 1964 he went to Goldfinger, 1965 went to Thunderball, and then in 1967 he went to You Only Live Twice, and famously actually retired from the part. So that's why if you look at when the films came out, George Lazenby's film came out in 1969 between Sean Connery's next film, which was Diamonds Are Forever. Now, by Eon production standards, you know, the Broccoli family and whatnot, that was the last official Sean Connery James Bond film. But then in 1983, he did Never Say Never Again, which was an unofficial James Bond movie where he came back as the agent spy. And it's not canon, though, according to them. But that is his repertoire. as James
Bond. The thing I like about Connery is that it never feels like he's trying to be really cool or he's trying to be really suave and handsome. It's just a part of who he is. And when you have that standard set as this is a piece of the character to portray and people try to reanimate that, they try to do their own take on it and it just doesn't come to life. That's what creates and solidifies him as being the best, arguably. And why, you know, I see that there's a piece of it to Troy's point that is it because he's the first? It's partly that, but it's mostly because he's the first who's done it the best. People couldn't overcome him.
Yeah, I mean, they've all tried. Every single one of these guys. And great in their own respect. Except for Roger Moore. Roger Moore went a completely different way. He didn't try to emulate Sean Connery in any respect. But all the rest of them were definitely trying their own version of the character that Sean Connery brought to life. I mean, you know, for better or worse. Like all the cheesy quips and stuff that you groan at. I know Troy and I have talked about this, that you groan at some of these Bond movies. Connery nailed them. Like he just had a knack for it. He could, hell, even in his career, in his future career, as he went through all the other movies, I mean, he's doing The Rock and things like that. He's still doing that same kind of quip and pulling them off.
And he still looks like James Bond. Like I look at him, well, not anymore, but a year ago, and you could still say that is James Bond. Like he still has that same demeanor, and that's just a part of who Sean Connery was.
And then David Niven also played James Bond, a version of James Bond in the original Casino Royale. You can look that up. That's interesting. I don't know why they did this, but it's definitely not the same Casino Royale you are familiar with. And it's also not canon. So you can kind of ignore that film as well if you want to. But if you're looking for some James Bond to check into, there you go, David Niven. And then you got George Lazenby, which we did talk about a second ago a little bit. He's the pinch hitter. He got brought in when Connery said, I'm done with this part. And he did this role. And on Her Majesty's Secret Service, which many people feel is the best Bond film. It's definitely, you know, by many accounts, the most emotional. I do not personally feel that way, but many people do. Where Blofeld infamously murders James Bond's wife. And he had one shot at it. I feel like people are extremely split on his efforts as James Bond. I thought he was fine, but I don't think he deserved to be in any more movies personally, but a lot of other people feel differently. So do you guys have an opinion on Lazenby?
He was very okay. I mean, I feel bad saying that. He got the part, so he did something right in his audition at least, but I'm just not. So I went back and watched a clip for a specific reason from On Her Majesty's Secret Service. And I just don't feel the same emotional impact that I should from him as an actor. I don't feel like he's as cool. You know, I just feel like he's a guy who's like, all right, man, sure, I'll be James Bond. That's fine.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, people keep telling me, I've had this conversation with people for many, many, many years, where they tell me how On Her Majesty's Secret Service is very emotional because Bond's wife gets killed and it's a very powerful moment. I've heard people use the word powerful. I have never found that scene to be powerful. I feel like if Connery had played it, or if Craig had played it, even Brosnan or Dalton, or definitely not Moore, but those guys, if they had played that scene, I feel like we would have felt it. We would have been there emotionally when she's shot and murdered and he's holding her in his arms and he's on the side of the road and, you know, he's just basically like, she's resting, you know, she just needs to, you know, and it is supposed to be a very impactful moment. I just don't think it plays. And that's for me personally, because I don't love his performance in that moment. I think he's fine in the other stuff. I didn't like him in that moment. And to me, that's the most important moment of the whole movie.
Yeah. I think in that sequence when she's dying and laying over, he is, and it could be like how he had to work with it and everything. So I don't want to like fault that at all, but it just feels almost comical in a way.
Yes. Yeah. And that might be a product of time. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be. Like you're watching it now and going like, well, maybe this was emotional back then. Cause I mean, even the drive-by shooting when the guy comes, when they come by and shoot her in the car while he's outside of the car, even that's kind of comical on the sound effects that actually how the bullets come through and how it all lands. Mm-hmm. But it, I mean, really, even though he's trying to just say that she's resting, like you would still think that the tears, the emotion, because he knows what happened. He's just trying to play it off in his mind.
In shock.
Externally in shock. But he'd still, he can still understand. I mean, it's on the window. So you know that she got shot in the head. It's like, come on. Like you have to have at least some tears and you never see any tears.
Well, and also her head just like drops. Yeah. So like when you go to comfort her, yeah.
She has a hole in her head. Help. You can see the shot in the window and then you see a hole in her head. Very, you know, abstract, I guess, but it's there.
And maybe that's why Lazenby only got the one movie. I think part of the challenge too is that you can't really judge Lazenby just for this one movie because he only had the one movie mm-hmm. to kind of work out the part. And because they knew that Connery was leaving, they also like didn't know what to do with the character. So there was a little bit of like trying to flush out the Bond character of what the next Bond was going to be. So he has to like not only live up to the Connery standard, he's also got to try to work his way through trying to understand what Bond is becoming and then never really giving the chance to see that through because he only was in the one film.
I don't know. You still get one chance. I feel like he didn't use that opportunity to really shine for me. So I'm still going to judge and critique his performance. Like, I get it's not fair to compare him as much to the other actors who have had a lot more films to back them up where they had an opportunity. But
right. In
the most part, right. The ones that we really love, the first movie they came out with, we liked. So
that's interesting. I kind of wonder, I mean, and I'm with you, Amanda. I'm more so than definitely Troy. But to Troy's point, though, I kind of wonder, do you think the producers just panicked? Lazenby had his one shot and it wasn't that great. So mm-hmm. they just said, oh, we'd throw the money at, I know they threw money at Connery to bring him back for one more. So you feel like that's what happened here? I mean, they just panicked instead of giving Lazenby one more time, one more crack at it?
Could be. I mean, it's like one of the, if you'd like do the adjusted inflation, it's probably the third lowest grossing film of the entire batch overall. I mean, No Time to Die is already ahead of it almost at this point out of the gate when you adjust it all. So I think they were just like, oh my gosh, like we didn't probably make the money we wanted to make initially. Let's bring Sean back. Whatever it takes, just pay him.
Well, and he had also created the character on screen. If you can choose to have the person who drew in audiences and made it, you know, what you had envisioned in your mind from reading the books and from thinking about this character, and he brings it to life, you're obviously going to want that guy versus homeboy who can't even actually bring a tear to his eye over his dead wife.
And they threw all the money, they threw their kitchen sink at him filled with money in 1971. It was 1.2 million in 1971.
Oh my God.
Plus 12.5% of the gross, which was virtually unheard of at that time. That's amazing. That's just, I mean, that's how much he's just like, I'm going to get the best deal I can. Yeah. Give me that martini. Give it to me dirty. I don't care. Good for him.
An additional $12 million.
Good for him.
At 12% of the gross. Yeah.
Good for him. All right. So Roger Moore. Now, a lot of people love Roger Moore. I find him interesting for sure. But he was in several movies. 1973's Live and Let Die. A fantastic song, by the way. 1974's The Man with the Golden Gun. 1977, The Spy Who Loved Me. 1979's Moonraker, that classic. 1981's For Your Eyes Only. 1983's Octopussy. And 1985's A View to a Kill. A View to a Kill. The first one that Troy saw was the last one that Roger Moore did. What say y'all about the Roger Moore?
I think from Roger, it was more around, like, started out good, kind of, like, valued, and then kind of came back up again at the end. I think he is overall decent, but I think the challenge is that I think Moore is probably the most unlike the novel version. He was more witty, he was more funny, so it didn't really fit the Fleming character.
Very cheeky.
Yeah.
Well, I don't like him. I mean, he is just, first of all, those movies are way too ridiculous for me. I mean, I get you want to try something different. You've got a new actor, by all means, but I didn't like his take on the character. I didn't like that it felt like there was no real substance. It was
wasn't. No, there definitely wasn't. Right, you were correct about that.
And it just became so ludicrous, some of the plot points in the movies. I know we're judging this based on him, but he's also like trying to be so entertaining and fun, where it's like, to me, when I think of James Bond, I think of one of the most forward-thinking, logical, smart, intelligent, charming, just charismatic people who has his own kind of weird humor to him. And it's not Roger Moore to me. Plus, he's not cute.
No.
That doesn't help.
Roger Moore always seemed to me more of like the crazy fun uncle. You know, everybody or aunt, you know, whatever you're into, you know, everybody had like some crazy relative that, man, it was always fun. Let's go see what cousin Jimmy's doing. Like, he's always fun to hang out with. Ah, look at him drinking again. Oh, the lady man. You know, it's just, that's what he reminded me. He never struck me as James Bond. More like Hank, who got a shot at the costume and the badge. And so he got to go run around and shoot people and, you know, get lucky with the ladies. He was kind of like a frat boy with a MI6 badge.
I like this analogy.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm going with.
But he did the most movies. That's the interesting thing. So he's able to hold the franchise, which is I don't understand like how that was able to just go for so long.
Honestly, his version of Bond, and keep in mind, like, I still enjoy those movies. I don't love him as Bond. I still enjoy those movies. They're just so much more campy, so much more over the top and cheesy in many respects. But I do think they were definitely a product of his time. I think Sean Connery's films kind of hold up going back to rewatch them. They weren't just action gadgety opuses. I mean, there was actually like real stakes and drama involved. Roger Moore's very much to me feel like a thing of the time. If you go back and watch, like, they fit the 80s and the late 70s. They fit that mold. His version of Bond fit that mold. It just, because in the 80s were like that, and the late 70s were like that. And he just oversexed, cheesy, one-liners. I mean, just, yeah. I mean, he kind of fit the time.
Yeah, you're basically doing like an international version of Chips.
Yeah, with an accent. Sure.
Yeah, because that's what sold at that time. I mean, people wanted to have fun. They wanted to escape what was going on with Vietnam and the gas crisis and the Cold War and all that stuff.
It should be. There should be a level of escapism. I will say, since you bring that up, that is one thing I think is lacking in the Daniel Craig movies. They don't feel so much as escapism. They don't feel so much about fun. They feel much more, almost too grounded in reality. I mean, I'll get to the most recent one here in a bit, but I mean, I think.
Yeah, I guess you totally said that about Spectre and the whole like digital information collection concepts.
Yeah, it was just very serious.
It's almost too close to home.
Not so much that. It's just they weren't fun. Like, I like those movies, but they aren't fun. They are not the same as a lot of the other James Bond movies, especially the Brosnan, the Moores. Even Timothy Dalton had a little bit more fun, which, unless you got more to say about Roger Moore, we can segue into Timothy Dalton.
I will just add, Casino Royale was fun, though. When we're talking about the Craig movies, I feel like Casino Royale was fun.
It was definitely more fun than the other ones that came after that were very, very serious. But we'll get to Craig. Hang tight. Timothy Dalton, Living Daylights, License to Kill. This guy had two shots at it. Personally, I think he did very well as James Bond. I always feel like he got railroaded out of the part for whatever reasons, or he left the part, I think. What say y'all? Did you like the Dalton?
Yeah, he got railroaded out because there's a difference between trying to put the character of the book on the screen and then actually selling tickets. And I think in this case, you know, Dalton was the one that was probably the most like the books. And I think that was probably the challenge, is that people were so used to seeing the kitschy, fun, weird Roger Moore stuff that when Dalton comes in and becomes more like the books, even the movies are decent. I think the challenge is that people aren't expecting to see more of a harder, darker version of Bond. And because of that, it didn't do as well. And that's why they pulled the plug and had to basically take a almost 10-year hiatus to come back.
Yeah, they did take quite a break because movies, especially License to Kill, really flopped. I thought Living Daylights was actually a really good movie.
Aren't these supposed to be the ones that are most aligned to the books?
Exactly.
Is my understanding. So I mean, to a Bond fan, these may arguably be some of the favorites, but I don't know. I guess when I compare, obviously I have a different perception than you guys because I was introduced to the the Pierce Brosnan, and then, you know, Sean Connery kind of jumped over the map a little bit, and then Daniel Craig and kind of went backwards. But Timothy Dalton is just too dark. Like, I feel like he's the Batman of James Bond.
Very much. And I mean, he kind of was.
That's just
Batman.
Not what I see. You know, when I think about James Bond, I don't think about Batman. And I always. The other thing is, there has to be something super alluring physically, which I hate to say, but that is a big thing about being James Bond, is that you are physically attractive. And Timothy Dalton is just, he just ain't it. He's better than Roger Moore, don't get me wrong, but I don't know. He just didn't have that same suaveness to him that I feel
that
like.
Chin butt? Is that why it's got that chin butt?
Butt chin. Don't judge his little butt chin.
I'm not. You're the one that said he's ugly. You just literally said Timothy Dalton's ugly. He is a horribly hideous man, is what I heard.
No,
that's
literally
what you said.
I just feel like when I look at him, he seems like the bad guy to me. You know, I want to look at a guy who is James Bond and feel like, oh, he's my hero. He's going to sweep me away. Because that's what they're trying to get across to women. That's what they're trying to get across to the Bond girls, is that he's the hero.
I believe they call them broads in the movies.
Dames. That's actually probably accurate. Yeah. But broads. He's supposed
James
to be a little bit crossing the line in many ways, but not a bad guy. And Timothy Dalton just has like a very villainous persona to me.
Well, it's because that's exactly what he was like in the book.
Hang on. Slow down on that. He wasn't like a villain in the book. I did read the books. He was not like a villain in the books. He was just very, very mostly serious. The quips, not so much. It was really, I mean, he's a very focused individual, but still charming. I mean, ladies did fall over him.
But he would almost see, like, in the book, he would come off almost cold in a way because he was so focused and so determined and so... Like right
yes,
there.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Which Craig emulates very much too.
Very much so.
Oh my God. And the first one especially.
Yeah. But you know, Timothy Dalton, I felt like was a strong James Bond. And it's kind of funny. I always thought that this little tidbit is kind of funny. In terms of the director, John Glenn directed a bunch of the Roger Moore ones. I think he did For Your Eyes Only, Octopussy, View to a Kill.
Yeah, the entire 80s, basically.
Yeah, he did the whole 80s, because he also did Living Daylights and License to Kill. But those two movies don't feel connected in any way, shape, or form to me, which is interesting. Same director of all those movies, and those feel distinctly like their own thing. They don't feel like, you know, Roger Moore movies with Timothy Dalton in them. You know, they actually felt like different movies.
Maybe different writers, potentially.
Well, yeah, but different, I mean, but usually if you have the same director, it's going to, at least in some respect, emulate the other films pretty closely, and I don't feel like it does. I feel like if you go back and watch those two movies, they really stand out as their own thing. Timothy Dalton kind of made those movies their own thing.
Yeah, you could say that, because I just watched Skyfall and Spectre again, and looking at Sam Mendes's work, you can truly see that those like two movies are almost like could have just been like shown back to back in the theater. Mm-hmm. And then when you watch No Time to Die, it definitely has a different flavor to it for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. All right, then we move on to a very popular Bond. I would argue the best Bond with the worst writers. Like, I really feel like he had the potential to beat Sean Connery. I believe it 100%. I believe it in my heart. He just was never given the opportunity because the writers just weren't there, except for maybe Goldeneye. So Pierce Brosnan was in four movies: Goldeneye, Tomorrow Never Dies, The World Is Not Enough, and Die Another Day, and then didn't return. And there was a very unceremonious split between him and the Broccoli family. But, you know, that's, we don't know the facts, you know. But what did you guys think?
He got fired. Those are the facts.
Yeah. Well, it always makes me mad. Like, they've been touting Daniel Craig deserves to have his last leg. We're not going to talk about the next Bond until 2022 because we're going to let him have his ride into the sunset and all this. And I'm like, Pierce Brosnan was a great Bond, and you guys, like, screwed him over royally. That's awful, my opinion. But, whatever.
Yeah, because the movies were almost like Roger Moore movies, but with a better Bond.
Much better Bond. I thought Pierce Brosnan was a fantastic James Bond. So those are the four movies. Goldeneye, I think, is a great movie. The other ones, not so much.
Not so much.
Not so much. Die Another Day. If you had time, you could literally spend an hour picking that plot apart for how ridiculous everything in it is. But he's still great in it. He's still great in it. Which I think that's Die Another Day. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Die Another Day. Anyway, so what do you guys think Pierce Brosnan as James Bond?
Yeah, like you said, I perfectly fine. I think it was like the maybe a little bit too reverse course on Dalton. I think that was the issue, was that Dalton was there more like the book. Brosnan comes in. He's a little bit more the Connery flashy, you know, good looking, you know, persona. But like you were saying, like the movies just are not great movies. And I think it probably suffers a little bit more because you're trying to maybe over sexualize the Bond girls at that point in time. And you maybe were also trying to, I don't know, the co-stars that got wrapped around Pierce, I think were the issue. There was just a lot of talent that just didn't really fit the mold like it does in later movies with Daniel Craig, potentially.
Like Terry Hatcher. That was, yeah. What? And Denise Richards? What? Yeah.
Even Halle
Berry? Dr. Christmas Jones? I don't think so. Where'd she go to school? Was it online? I didn't even have online, I don't think, but she must have went online. It was an AOL school.
Yeah, Pierce Brosnan is muy bien. He is the most delicious looking James Bond that we've had. He also has such like a, he just emulates this persona, this, his demeanor, everything about him just feels like the kind of guy who could actually stop the world from ending and can do all the cool stuff and can attract all the ladies and still get his job done at the end of the day. Like, he is to me one of the most perfect Bonds that I could have ever pictured. But to your point, the movies are not as great. And that's unfortunate, man, because he is just so perfect for the role.
I will forever wonder what, and I know Casino Royale is kind of hard for Brosnan to pull that one off because it's meant to be like his first real case and everything. But the other movies, as good as Craig was, just think if Brosnan had those kinds of writers, I feel like his run as James Bond would be seen as a much more legendary run than it currently is because his films are weaker, even though he wasn't.
I mean, I always thought Thomas Crown Affair was a Bond movie because it was like
so much. Basically.
So, yeah. It was like watching him. Rene Russo should have been a freaking Bond girl.
He was just so charming. Yeah. I mean, and so great in the action scenes, even though he doesn't do anything too crazy. I mean, sure, Craig is definitely more of a brawler, but Brosnan was just cool as hell. And he delivered the quips well.
I know. I was just going to say the Bond, James Bond even, is masterful. It is the perfect iteration of what I would want to hear when someone says it.
Even though I love Connery, when Brosnan is the only Bond that can say Bond, James Bond, and I can go 6 to midnight. I swear to God, it's just, it's amazing to me.
He's a handsome devil.
He is. And he pulls it off. He's just a very wow.
And like when he starts to get a little sweaty and he's got his suit jacket off and so he's just got his shirt on and he's holding his gun, you're just like, I can see why women would just literally fall over themselves. Because that's the problem I have as a woman with a lot of these movies, is the women just seem so dumb and ridiculous. And it's just like, why are you doing this? Pierce Brosnan, I'd get it.
I don't care how good, yes, Brosnan I could get, but for the majority, I don't care how good looking you are. It just doesn't happen like that. Oh, well, we were at the same horse track and look at this. I said some stupid cheesy dad joke and now suddenly we're in bed. What? That doesn't work. I know. I've tried it. It does not work. This is a lie. So basically these whole movies have destroyed, you know, any chance of studlery I ever had.
He had great hair too for like an action movie.
He still does.
He does. He didn't lose it.
No, he aged well. All right. Last, but definitely not least, Daniel Craig. Now, I will say his movies have kind of reinvigorated Bond. I believe that financially they are the most successful since the Connery ones, even if you adjust for inflation. And, you know, I could be wrong about that, but I mean, they did monster business. I mean, Skyfall, I think, is the first Bond movie to hit $1 billion. Granted, different times than when the other films came out.
It's pretty close, even adjusted.
Yeah, see? So, I mean, it's huge successes these have been. And he did kind of make the first real Bond movies that were sequels. You know, all of his movies are kind of connected, which didn't really happen in the Bond world until Daniel Craig came along, till his movies came along. You know, you can see a linear path from Casino Royale through No Time to Die. You can't get that with Connery's movies or Roger Moore's movies. Even Timothy Dalton, he's only in two of them. So, you know, that always impressed me. So what do you guys think of Daniel Craig and his run? It just finished, so I know it's a lot more fresh in your minds, but what do you feel about Daniel Craig as James Bond?
I just completed a rewatch of all of them to prepare for No Time to Die. And the first thing that sticks out to me, and it really shook me, is in Casino Royale, I forgot how much of a douchebag he was. He was not a nice guy. He was not, I just didn't find him charming. He was very off-putting. And so I kind of had to sit to myself. And by the end, obviously, I'm more allured by him. And he has all of the action skills. But I was just like, man, is my recollection really terrible? Was Bond always this kind of just rude to people?
Yes. Yeah.
And so, but that's the thing that...
more charming about it, more flippant about it.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing that I've actually really enjoyed about Daniel Craig's arc throughout these movies is he's gone from kind of being that very reserved, typical James Bond character who is focused on his career. He's trying to save the world all the time, and he's got a mission, and he's got guns, and he's got fancy gadgets and all this stuff. And, oh, women flock to him and he'll sleep with them, but, you know, it is what it is. Then he starts to progress and he starts to, you know, gain friends and family and care about people. And women are not just a one-night stand to him. And that evolution of his character and Daniel Craig's performance of that really shined through for me, where I was like, you know what? I guess I did not give Daniel Craig as much credit over these past almost 10 years as I probably should have given him.
15 years.
Has it been 15 years? Yeah. I was going to say it's probably been more than 10 years by now. So, yeah, I've really enjoyed that piece of it. And I, even though there's a bump in the road with Quantum of Solace.
Even that title's a bump.
I know. But even with that one, I still enjoyed watching him in it. And he's just, I think it comes down to his physical appearance. It's his eyes. He's got those really beautiful blue radiating eyes where it's like.
They really do pop. They really
He can
do.
Just enchant you or something. Like, it's magical.
I mean, yeah, Dolby Atmos and just seeing his blue eyes on that screen. Oh.
For a while, I thought they gave him right? those vampire contacts or something. I'm like, what the?
I thought so, too. I really did.
They're so blue. That isn't normal.
Yeah, I think for a lot of what Amanda said, I think it's the same exact thing, right? All the movies were on point. It's like basically, I thought it was like watching a mixture of all of these actors throughout time as he progresses from Casino all the way through this latest rendition. Like in Casino, he's kind of like the Timothy Dalton, you know, James Bond. And then by the time he gets down to the Daniel Craig, he's more like, or down to No Time to Die, he's more like a Roger Moore campy kind of version of it because of the one-liners and groaners that are inside of No Time to Die specifically. I think that you know, he encapsulated the feel of the character from the books in a way that also allowed him to grow so that audiences would keep coming back to see the movies. It is a really good job, I think, by the team to make sure that there was the arc that carried all the way through. So that way there was reason for people to want to come back and actually, like we all just did, right? Watch all these movies all over again a second time in preparation for Daniel's farewell.
Yeah. And if I didn't say it, Casino Royale, Quantum of Solace, Skyfall, Spectre, and No Time to Die were his films. And I do agree. That's the one thing that I found fascinating about this section of films is they started with Casino Royale, Daniel Craig's introduction. And it was supposed to be, this is Bond's first mission. And then each film has kind of jumped in time to show him this is where his evolution is. And it actually is showing, even the gadgets have started evolving as the film went on, which I find absolutely fascinating. I'm like, okay, so it's actually the last film before he's really peak Bond. You know what I mean? I mean, really, Spectre, he does hit it. And then, you know, in No Time to Die, he's kind of playing, this is Bond after he's done, he saved the world so many times. And this is, you know, his mission, Craig's last run, so to speak. But the whole series, if you put them all together, they feel like one package where none of the other actors have a run like that as James Bond. None of them do.
Yeah, they're all standalone movies.
They
where
are.
In this case, you have like, you know, when it starts out, he's just trying to find his way.
It's an official franchise.
But then by the time you get to No Time to Die, way more gadgets, way more trickery, way more fun, because that's really where he's at, because he's now at the level of, you know, seasoned Bond at that point.
Mm-hmm. So I guess that brings me to another question. What do you guys prefer? Because for decades, we had James Bond movies that were one-offs, where you could literally start and finish any Bond movie in any order, and you didn't have to see anything before that, because it basically covered whatever the plot was self-contained. Here, if you actually start with Skyfall, you're probably going to miss some stuff. If you start with Spectre, you're definitely going to miss some stuff. If you start with No Time to Die, you won't know what the hell is going on, I don't think, for a big portion of the movie, because a lot of that movie reflects back to previous movies. You know, I think they do a decent enough job of trying to catch you up. But if you've never seen the other ones, it's going to be a little harder than it would be. So what do you think about that? Do you hope the next Bond continues that trend, or do you prefer to go back to the Brosnan, the Connerys, the self-contained movies?
I don't know. I kind of like either of them. I've enjoyed having the one-offs, but I've also really enjoyed this era of Craig, if you will, where every so many years you can grab your family and friends and go see the latest James Bond movie. And it's part of a story. But in many respects, I do feel like they can be standalone. Not to the point where everything is wrapped up in one movie by any means, but at least that movie concludes enough that it feels like, all right, if I don't see the next one, it's fine. And then if you come into No Time to Die, I actually think they did a really good job of putting all the pieces together and making enough subtle references that you could understand it, you could get by. It might not be, it's not perfect, and it might not be, you know, the easiest, but I think somebody could come into it, enjoy the movie, and maybe just pick up on some of the subtle hints. Like, most of it, they kind of get you to the answer of at some point in the movie.
I mean, yeah, we'll talk about No Time to Die later. I don't completely agree with that. I thought there were some things that they dropped the ball on as far as explaining the past movies. But I think in the terms of the question around trilogy kind of concept on this, I think it would have worked great if the timing was like the Pierce Brosnan timing. I think there's a recency factor, so that if you do like Star Wars or even Lord of the Rings happened successively because they actually filmed them successively. But like even Star Wars, like 3 years for Star Wars is good. Once you get to year four, year five, you really have to do it as a standalone movie, because people aren't going to remember the previous movie, and not a lot of people are going to go watch the previous movie because they don't know that they're supposed to, because it wasn't told to them at the end of the movie that it was going to continue to the next movie. So I think if they're going to do the next group of movies, you know, 2 years, 3 years apart, you can keep that kind of like, you know, it is a trilogy of stuff or a quadrilogy of stuff. But if they're going to do like 5 years apart, like just make them standalone entries, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think I prefer standalone. I've loved Craig's run. Like, I'm not disputing that they work great, but I prefer the olden days. I prefer just walking in, hit it and quit it, so to speak, which, you know, fits James Bond too.
Yeah, I definitely think No Time to Die suffers a little bit if you don't have the knowledge of the at least the previous two, if not all four.
Yeah, yeah. Well, definitely, I mean, Vesper's important. I mean, there's a lot of factors that are important. Spectre's very important. If you just start with that one, you might not even know what Spectre is. So, it kind of makes it kind of hard to know what the hell's going on. But we'll talk about that at the end. We don't
guarantee his money, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Because people, here's the thing. We're not talking about any franchise. We're talking about James Bond, which has millions upon millions, billions of dollars brought in because people are willing to get out to the theaters. We're finally seeing that with this movie, where people are going to the theaters because it's James Bond. They want to see it. Mm-hmm. I think people are willing to rewatch, pay for a rental fee, or purchase the movie. That's a lot of good money that they can accrue as a plan by just pacing them out and having them as part of a franchise. I think to Troy's point is right, though. You don't want to do it too long, because then you can suffer. People aren't going to want to do this for another 15 years, but
you dilute it. You don't want to do that. So I already said my favorite Bond is Sean Connery. What about you guys? Who's your ultimate favorite of all those?
I don't prescribe to the Bonds. I watch the movies for the villains and the ladies.
Shut up. Pick one.
They're all good. I mean, they all have their own qualities. I mean, I liked Pierce. I thought Pierce was just fascinating in the way he played the role. I liked Daniel Craig as well. I mean, I don't really have a favorite. I would say if I had to not go back and watch one, Dalton would be the one I would not go back and watch.
That's a miraculous way of not even coming close to answering the question. Amanda, what about you?
Including the way the movies are put out, the outcome of the movies, I would say number one, Connery, number two, Brosnan, number three, Craig.
That kind of surprises me. Brosnan's above Craig.
He is so hot.
Because that's where she started.
And to be fair, there is probably a nostalgia factor because that's where, you know, that was my era. That's where I kind of grew up with James Bond starting from. Like, I guarantee you, people who were born in the early 2000s who started growing up with Daniel Craig, they're going to say James Bond to them as Daniel Craig. And they're going to see him as, you know, the best James Bond. Because when you're seeing something from a different time, it's really hard to see it as the time that it should have been presented, you know, that it was presented in originally. You know, you look at now, the effects, the guns, the ladies, the outfits, I mean, all of it is just like, whew, compared to the older James Bond movies that just didn't have the technology then.
I can't even picture what it would be like for someone who's 15 right now in 2021 and goes back and watches the Roger Moore movies.
Right.
What that would be like. What'd you say?
Unless it's Yeah. Unless it's a 15-second TikTok that they can scroll through really fast, they're never going to go back and watch those movies.
It's probably true. It's sad, isn't it? All right. So what do you guys want to see in the next series of Bond movies? No matter who it is, because we're going to determine who the damn Bond's going to be. All right. We're getting there. But what do you want to see in the next series of Bond movies? Is there anything in particular you do want to see? Like, this has to be in the next series.
Less misogyny. Less.
Oh, easy.
I mean, let's just be real.
Yeah, let's be real. Easy.
I've enjoyed in some of the more recent Bond movies where the women have more to do than just be the pretty face on his arm.
I agree with that.
Where they get to have some fun too. You know, I would love if there was like a Bond team up, like him and his lady picks up a gun and it tries to like help him out, and they kind of go on this pursuit together or something. That would be fun to me. I'm very much so, and I realized this just this past week, that I'm really over that element of Bond where women are just so disposable. I feel like we've progressed enough as a society. Our movies should kind of keep pace with that. That's just something that's died for me.
Would you want to see a James Bond movie where he gets constantly rejected for being a chauvinist?
That would be absolutely hilarious, although that would kind of defeat the point of James Bond.
Wouldn't it take you out of the moment a little bit?
Definitely. James Bond, I think there's something charming about, and it's still very realistic, about a man who has the most, he just looks dapper. He probably smells super good.
Super confident.
Does, yes, crazy confidence. He probably actually uses lotion on his hands. Pro tip to men, do that. It's good for you. And has that allure that women flock to him. That's very real. I'm fine with that. I want there to be something more to the ladies that are part of it. We've started to see that a little bit more in the more recent movies. Mm-hmm. So I hope that just continues.
Oh, and I love what they did with them, with Judi Dench. I mean, just made her a powerhouse. And she was the most compelling character of the Brosnan movies, of Daniel Craig's movies. I mean, she was just, every time she was on screen, you're just like, what is she going to do next? Oh, she is colder than him. Love her.
I'm really tired of women dying, though, to create a plot device for Bond.
Sure.
In the Craig movies, that was very much so. It was like, oh, my lady died. And then, oh, my other lady died. My motherly lady. So now I've got to try to get revenge for all of them. And it's like, well, maybe something else happens.
How about we stop killing my ladies? Maybe I'm the problem.
It also kind of makes you sad for James Bond. Like, does he ever get a happy ending?
Oh, he gets a happy ending. Sorry.
Yeah, oh, boy.
Too easy.
That was a preemptive no. I knew where you were going.
It's too easy. All right. So what about you, Troy? What has to be in the next movies?
I mean, this is the hard part because people are like, well, is it a James Bond movie or is it a 007 movie? I think that's going to be the number one question.
I think it'll be a James Bond movie. They've been very clear about that.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I think because of that, I think going back to the personal vendettas, I think we've spent enough time with Spectre, the organization, and C's organization, and global organizations that we haven't had anything in a while that's just been personal vendetta related. So I think we have to go more back to that root, if you will, of what the Bond movies are about.
Yeah, I would actually, and I know the inclination is going to be to go back to massive set pieces and world domination plots and that sort of thing. But if you really go back and look, Casino Royale, I would argue, is easily the best Bond movie of the century and one of the best action thrillers of the century as well. Just overall, I feel like it's a fantastic film, period. And a lot of that is because the stakes are high, but they're not over the top. They're never targeted assassination plots. I'll get into that later. But, you know, it's very much here we have a guy who's basically financing the evil in the world. We got to stop him. And once if we can turn him, then great. He's an asset. You know, it's a smaller level of plot, but the movie feels super intense. The action scenes are fantastic. That parkour scene is still the best in all of the Craig movies, in my opinion, in terms of an action scene. Make more like that than mustache twirling global domination. I came up with this ridiculous plot to kill millions. Not that you can't have those. I just feel like let's build to it again. You know,
or you're killing millions because of the fact that Bond made you do it. So there's at least some tie back into the Bond character.
I don't need that. I just want Bond on a mission. I don't care what the mission. It doesn't have to be personal. In fact, after these movies, I hope they remove a lot of the personal components. Honestly, I just am kind of burned out on personal Bond missions. A little too much. I don't need to know about his childhood. It's James Bond. I get it. You know. It's done.
But I think Amanda's got a point, though, and obviously we'll talk about this in a little bit, but I think there's definitely there's more 00s, so let's do more 00 team-up movies.
They're not going to do it. They've already said that they have no intention to spin anything off. I think they just did that because, you know, he was retired. He's retired in this film, so someone else should pick up the mantle, you know, but they have said the next movie is going to be a James Bond movie. It's going to be like, that's the character. They don't want to spin it off. They don't want to do Lego movies. They don't want to do cartoons or other characters. They're very, and I kind of commend them because in a world where everybody's trying to make a universe, the Broccoli family, who's in charge of the James Bond legacy, says, we're just going to stick with James Bond. We're not diluting the crap out of this.
And that's fine. I just think it would be fun with James Bond to have, you know, he doesn't have to do, he obviously needs other people as part of his team. You saw that in the Craig movies. I think you just add in some other 00s.
Oh, bring
or
back Paloma.
Just
for
his
sure.
Lady. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have fun with it.
Have Moneypenny be more out in the field.
Oh, she's great too. She was great in the field, minus that she's a bad shot, apparently. But aside from that,
I think it was a great shot. She just did what she could. It was close.
I think you should rewatch that movie. That's so great.
The train is moving and they're dancing around. I mean,
James Bond wouldn't have missed that shot. That's all I'm saying. He would have made it. And they should have just trusted
him.
His
hand was all shaky and stuff after getting shot in the shoulder.
So what do you hope gets tweaked? Amanda already talked about misogyny. She wants that to stay like where women have an equal footing, which I agree with. I think that's a good plan. I mean, they've done a good job of evolving Bond, continue to evolve him. Aside from that, I just want the personal component to go away. That's really the one thing I want to leave.
I want the runtime to change.
Yeah, this one was way too long. 2 hours and 43 minutes. No, you are not Titanic. Stop
You're not Fellowship of the Ring.
there was a Titanic moment, though, that made me laugh. But which, I think...
Oh, okay.
Oh, in the most recent one. It was funny. I still want there to be some personal thing, though, for me, even if it's just he has the same friends, or he has the same colleagues, or, you know, the same M, or he has...
I think that'll happen. I think it'll be
something like
Q.
That, the same relationship, that sort of thing. I want there to be the personal tie and connection. I don't need the main plot to be a personal tie-in, but I do like having some sort of... And I think to evolve Bond, you have to have some sort of emotional component, because that shows the evolution of his character.
It's almost like you get to a point where, is he making it personal, or is he following the law, you know, of what MI6 in the UK stands for?
And I think in most ways, Bond will stay to that unless it's someone he cares about. So there's ways to still make there be an emotional impact and show that his walls have broken down a little bit as a character, but not make the whole thing a revenge film or revenge franchise.
Okay. Well, now we're going to get to our James Bond Battle Royale. But first, share your thoughts on this episode or anything else at our site, thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can email us with any thoughts to feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. And Patreon. Our show is independently funded. Therefore, all of the expenses are from our own pockets, and Patreon helps fans support us. Yeah. Welcome, Cauldron's Crypt. That's K-U-L-D-R-I-N. Cauldron's Crypt, which is a BDSM 101 podcast. That's what they... call themselves, who began supporting us. Thank you so much. And all I have to say to that is, thank you, sir. May I have another? And once you sign up, you get immediate access to all content in your respective tier. Thank you, Cauldron's Crypt. We really do appreciate it. And if you want to support the show, it's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider.
We should do a joint one where we talk about the TV show Bonded.
What's the TV show
Is it Bonding? Bond? I don't remember. It's on Netflix. It ended up getting canceled, but it was a really good show about bondage and BDSM and that world.
What'd you learn, Amanda? Tell us. Nothing. I mean, it's a show about Bond, right? Okay, that was bad. I feel like I'm doing the same quips. Goodness. All right, let's go to our James Bond Battle Royale. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the Hollywood Outsider Movie Battle Royale. That is where we take 8 films, 2 favorites from each of our hosts, and we determine which one is the ultimate greatest film in the entire Ho universe. It is definitely a lot of fun, and it is time to get to it. Let's decide what is the greatest film of a genre. It's time for the Movie Battle Royale. Okay, now unlike previous Battle Royales, what you need to sell each of your choices about is that why they deserve to be the next Bond. You don't have to go through the whole history lesson that we normally do when we do a battle royale, which we haven't done in a little bit. This is basically, you got 2 choices, each of us do, plus we have 2 listener choices, and we're all going to vote on them. So there won't be any tie because it's best of 3, right? No ties. Right. And just tell us why you think your 2 choices deserve to be the best Bond, and then take your votes and we'll move on to the next round. And we do Ho North and Ho South. Amanda and myself are Ho North. Troy and the listeners are Ho South. So Amanda, take it away. Your first 2 choices for who the new James Bond should be whenever they start casting him. Let's fill that slot for him. Let's help the Brockies out.
All right. So my first choice is Reggae Jean Page, who is the breakout performer of Bridgerton. This man has shown us through the TV show that he is fully capable of being very sexual, very romantic, very confident, very humorous. There are a lot of components to his range and ability. And he looks really dapper in a suit. He's already shown us all of these things. I commend him for just naturally being that guy. Good for him for naturally looking like James Bond and having that same kind of persona. So I definitely put my hat in for this man as my first choice. My second is Luke Evans. Whew. Another
wait,
hot
just stop
and sultry
there. I think
man.
That was a perfect pitch. I think just go and then pick.
I do want to notate, though, both of these individuals have shown range in their performances through the TV shows and movies that they've done. For Luke Evans, between Gaston, where that character is intended to be just incredibly handsome and charming and just trying to wrap you in, to 9 Perfect Strangers, where he really shows some dramatic brilliance and both of these choices, I want to add, one of the things that I am hoping for as we progress into the next phase of James Bond is an actor that is more diverse. So for Reggae Jean Page, he is a Black actor and Luke Evans is a gay actor. So I think for them to be the first and in a James Bond role would be incredible. I'm not saying that that's the reason I chose them, but it definitely boosted it up. And I wanted to throw in some diversity into my choices.
Hmm.
So of those two, of Reggae Jean Page and Luke Evans, what is your pick, Aaron?
Okay. And I assume we're going to use listeners if there's for like as the third choice.
Yeah. If there's, or, yeah.
Yeah. Can so do if, you that. And I, if you and I agree, then.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
So
I disagree, I should say.
So here's what I would say, except for when we get the listeners, then all three of us vote, and then we'll vote in the semifinals and so on and so forth. So I want to get this out of the way because you brought up the diversity thing. So I am an absolute advocate for respect to the source material. I think I've said that numerous times on the show. And in the respect of that, it doesn't change anything respective of the character itself that's on the page. Right. Now, I will say in the books, once again, I've read them. Have you? James Bond is very much a white guy and he's got blue gray eyes. So you can already say, well, some of the actors don't fit that technical description. Pierce Brosnan, I think, has brown eyes, so on and so forth.
And George.
Sure. And George. I didn't really look in his eyes too long. I was too busy going, no. So I think Connery probably does too, I would imagine. So for me personally, I don't think color really matters in terms of James Bond. I mean, yes, he is very much described as a white guy with you know, white or blue gray eyes. But in the same token, I can't remember anywhere in the book where race was a pivotal point of his character. You know what I mean? Like if it was a pivotal point of his character, I'd say, well, then it should remain that he is. He's a white guy. I don't think that pertains to James Bond. I do think he can't be a woman, and that's nothing sexist. I just think the character is very, the manliness of the character is very important to the character. It just is. I'm sorry. So I mean,
I think to your point though, what you would also add is that there could be a 00 agent that is a woman, but not a James Bond woman.
Correct.
You know, like you can have a 00 who is a woman, but it's not James Bond.
We have one, literally. Just recently in this movie. And I don't think anybody complained about it. It's just, it's not James Bond. That's all. If you're going to make a James Bond movie, it needs to be James Bond. I don't think color matters. But on the same token, I also don't think Reggie's that great. I feel like he's a flash in the pan. Talented, absolutely. I'm not knocking his talent. I've seen him on the show. I thought he was very funny on Saturday Night Live. I just don't see him as James Bond. And you put him next to Luke Evans, who I've seen do so many different things, and I think he would nail the part that I know in my head, in my heart. I'm just going to have to go with Luke Evans. But I was just explaining that to say that for all the people that want to say, well, he's a white guy in the books, I can't remember any point in the books where race mattered. Being a man matters because it's very much the character. I don't think race ever mattered that I can recall.
And a direct quote from Barbara Broccoli and Michael G. Wilson, who are longtime producers of the franchise. They specifically said he can be of any color, but he is male.
Okay. Well, I wish you would have just started with that. I could have saved myself some time. But I was trying to explain where my voting comes from.
From a reader's perspective, I get it.
Hey, man, I'm telling you, like, that's why I'm so firm on certain characters. You know, many years ago, we had a huge debate with Justin Cumber on the show about should Spider-Man be gay? And I was very against it because of all the history that he has with female characters and relationships. And it's very important to me. I'm saying Peter Parker specifically. Multiverse, do whatever you want. I'm just saying with that character, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the reason, is because I believe the history matters. And I don't think the history, a different color would matter here.
So clarify, Spider-Man can be gay, but Peter Parker cannot be.
Right. That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Or he could be bisexual and maybe he hasn't gotten to that point in his story.
Sure.
Where he's gotten with man.
Sure.
He could.
You've shown no indication of that.
It took me a long time.
I've ever read, but sure. Knock yourself out.
Troy, what's your pick? between
interesting twist. Rage. I'm like processing that now. That actually might be kind of fun to see. Yeah, I'm going to have to go with Luke Evans as well, agreeing with Aaron, only because I've seen Reggae in For the People, where he played Leonard Knox, and just looking at that character in For the People and kind of his swarminess and just this way he played that character, like I could not see Bond coming out of that same frame and mentality as he played that character in For the People. That killed it for me right out of the gate.
Okay. Well, my pick between these two is Luke Evans also, not that it matters, but...
Really? I'm curious, because usually when you give us a list, you know, they come in. So why Luke Evans? I want to hear.
He is an actor that has a lot of range, that has a track record of having a lot of range. And I'm not trying to shame Reggae, Jean Page, but I don't have as much of a portfolio to compare as I do for Luke Evans, where I have concrete evidence that I know that this man can pull off this type of character and that type of character, and he can go in many different ways for range. You know, he has so much confidence naturally. I can see, to Troy's point, where Mr. Page has moments of being more shrill, if you will. I think he could pull it together because, again, the reference that Troy has is from a few years ago, and he is a younger actor, so... certainly that's something that changes as you get older, whereas Luke Evans already kind of has that built into him.
For the record, that show ended in 2019, so it's not like it's that long ago.
Okay. All right.
Well, he's a very young actor, so it couldn't have been that long ago.
Right.
But, I mean, he's going to be fine. He doesn't need James Bond.
Right?
Yeah. Right.
That guy is going to be okay.
Yeah, they just keep making older people do more CW shows. You're totally good.
So Luke Evans moves on to the next round. So my two picks are polar opposite of each other. They just have similar accents. The first one is Richard Madden. And, you know, I know everybody's going to jump to Robb Stark from Game of Thrones. Rightfully so. He is great in Game of Thrones, and he quickly made me believe that he should be King of the North, and then also quickly made me believe he should not, because dumb guy.
Because then he died?
Yeah, well, no, he just made a really bad call. I mean, like... if you like, I watched the show, but he lived it. I would think he knew marrying her was probably going to be a bad thing. So anyway, he was great in that, but I don't want to stop with just that role. If you follow, I think it was a BBC series called Bodyguard. He was so fantastic in that role. And he plays this Bodyguard essentially with what, PTSD, would you say? Amanda, is that how you would describe it?
Yeah, I think that's, yeah.
I mean, he's mentally fractured. He is cracked. And he plays so many different variations of that character. And, you know, I've seen him do quippy. There's a movie called The Take, which ironically has Idris Elba in it. And he's very funny in that, and light and breezy. And then he does this, which is very dark and heavy and serious, which not many people have seen. Go find Bodyguard. I think it's on Netflix. It's really good. Or Hulu, one of them. And then, of course, Game of Thrones. Just overall, just a really well-rounded actor with stunning features, very handsome, and I really think he would just knock James Bond into the next century. I really do, which is weird because that's 75 years away, but whatever. my other pick, this goes back to fun. This is the Pierce Brosnan version of James Bond. It's Tom Ellis from Lucifer. If you've never seen Lucifer... man, I mean, it's not the greatest show on TV, but he's fantastic. He is just nothing but charm. But he also, I mean, he's playing the devil, so there's some dark moments too. And he plays those fantastically. And he can deliver a quip. He can deliver a quip. So these are the two guys that I think are my best choices for who should be James Bond. And, you know, no matter what happens, follow their work. They're really wonderful actors. So those are my two choices. Richard Madden and Tom Ellis. Troy.
That's a hard one. Man. Part of my problem with Richard Madden is just the style and shape of his face.
What?
He's got a chiseled jaw.
He's extremely handsome. Do you hate handsome people?
Super handsome.
Is that why you have a problem with me? Is that why?
Exactly right.
Yeah.
And my other challenge with Richard is that he's mostly known for TV stuff, not movies. Not that that's a bad thing, but it's like, can you take something that, as iconic as a franchise as Bond if you've only done TV?
Yes. Pierce Brosnan.
That's a good point. Tom Ellis has done a lot of TV, though, too.
Yeah, that's all he's done is TV. And Pierce Brosnan, Remington Steele, was about all he had done. He'd done a couple of movies that went nowhere. I'm just saying, like, and George Clooney, TV. Bruce Willis, TV. I can go on and on about TV guys that have become major movie stars. I'm just saying. Eternals, by the way. Richard Madden's going to be in Eternals. That's a huge movie.
Yeah. Tom Ellis. When I see Bond, I have a visual in my head of what Bond looks like. And I think that's the only thing I could go with to choose between these two. Because, I mean, they have lots of bodies of work. But it's not like anything that stands out. Like that work is, I could see Bond in that work specifically. The only reason I would lean to Richard Madden is because of 1917.
Oh, that's a good call too.
I think he did well as Lieutenant Blake in that one. And then because Eternals is coming up and I've seen enough of the Eternal stuff, I'm just kind of like, I like his character of Icarus as it's being portrayed in the trailers and stuff already. So from that reason alone, I'm going to go with Richard Madden over Tom Ellis.
Okay, Amanda.
So this is incredibly hard. This is way harder than my two choices were. And honestly, were probably better than my choices. I don't know. But the problem I have is...
I didn't have to say it.
Oh, don't be mean. The problem I have is I think Tom Ellis, when I look at him, he looks like Bond to me. But I haven't seen him use guns a whole lot. Like, I think... he's probably held a gun once or twice in Lucifer or something, but not usually. He doesn't usually have to do anything like that. So I haven't seen him with weapons, which I feel like is a critical piece of a Bond character, is being able, well, because you have to be able to use a gun, and it has to look natural. It has to look like that's, you're one with that unit, that you know weapons, you can unlock and load and clean and do all the things.
Yeah, if you're Bond, you got to use both guns. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So for that reason, I lean towards Richard Madden, but on the retrospect of it, Richard Madden is, I believe, younger, and I lean towards an older, by probably 10 years almost, I lean towards a more aged Bond, if you will. So this makes it really challenging for me. I'm basically walking you through to stall and buy time to decide what I want to do.
And?
Because Richard Madden was my number three until you brought up Tom Ellis, and I forgot about Tom Ellis, and I feel kind of bad now, because is he more like my number one or my number two? Madden fall on that?
If you pick Tom Ellis, we have to go to the listener poll. So your call, but you need to make it because we need to move on.
I'm going to go Richard Madden because I've seen him use guns, and I want to know that the man can use his weapons.
He would have won anyway. So he was okay. Higher in the listener poll. So there you go. Richard Madden moves on. Longest explanation in history, but we got it. We got it.
Ah, just two enchanting men.
Okay.
He wants a man, though, that shoots, not shoots blanks.
Exactly.
Oh, my.
Oh, my. All right. Ho South, Troy, who are your two picks?
My two picks are going to start out with probably one of the more obvious choices I would think would come out would be Benedict Cumberbatch. He has the breadth and depth to play Bond because he can basically do everything. The deduction of Sherlock to the deep brooding of Doctor Strange. Plus, he obviously played a very mind game with the rebooted Khan in Star Trek. Plus, I think he also has a good cat and mouse effect from that Khan role. But more importantly, he's Oscar nominated for his performance in The Imitation Game. So I think with all of that being said, I think Cumberbatch has the skills and the acting chops, and he does have the look in order to pull off what Bond would be able to do in that more, 40s, maybe early 50s type of age bracket, if that's the Bond that we're kind of going with for the next batch.
Okay.
My second one is James McAvoy, because if you just look at his range from what he's done in Split, then going and playing Charles Xavier and re-embodying that character that we saw Patrick Stewart do in the older movies, I think he's got a way that he could play off of that age disparity, if you will, and be able to embody a character so he could watch past Bond and then bring past Bond into the new role as he moves forward. The way he handles the gun, though, and Wanted, to go to Amanda's point, I think is the key.
He's working an angle, Amanda. He's working an angle.
I see that.
And I think the number one thing, though, is that because he's Scottish, so he just kind of fits that, you know, entire, you know, essence of the Sean Connery role. And if you know anything about Scottish, right, if it's not Scottish, it's crap.
What?
Those are my two. Saturday Night Live, man.
Oh.
Saturday Night Live.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Nobody all right. watches all of this anymore.
Wow. I just watched the Kim Kardashian episode. Don't judge me.
She actually did a pretty decent monologue. I actually laughed. I was impressed.
For a person reading a teleprompter the whole time. Absolutely. Yep.
Well, she threw shade at all of her family, so.
As she should. Troy, take your vote.
So, Amanda, James McAvoy or Benedict Cumberbatch?
God, this has never been easier. I love Cumberbatch, but I do not see him as Bond whatsoever. And McAvoy, whew, you guys remember 2017 when he got ripped? Ooh, he looked good. I could see him as Bond. And he pulls off suits well. He's obviously a talented actor also.
I like how acting was the last thing she mentioned. I don't
when
know.
When I think about Bond, they have to be attractive. Like,
he's hot. He's sexy.
Yeah.
It does matter.
I mean, and he can act.
It matters. I'm glad that she's being honest about it. You know, too often.
For the person who wants the misogyny out of
yeah,
right? I know, right? But that's the core of James Bond, is that he has to be able to be like really just enticing to women.
I'm to very people. Happy Agree. That you're Agree. Not focused on silly things like intelligence or personality or
they're all intelligent
skills.
Hotness should be number one when you're picking a mate. I mean,
when you're picking James Bond,
when you're picking
it
James
should
Bond,
be.
That's what I meant to say. Whoops. All right.
But he can be my mate. That's fine.
Yeah.
Just
I'm
kidding.
Gonna second. Actually, for pretty much the same reasons. I mean,
you're also not super attracted to Benedict
Cumberbatch. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, there's a factor where I see James Bond and I want to see a reason why I might, you know, pinch it for the other team or something. You know, I need a reason. And Cumberbatch doesn't give me any reasons for that. Craig, sure. Pierce Brosnan, definitely. Sean Connery, definitely. So, I want a very handsome fella, and McAvoy is a very handsome fella, and Cumberbatch is, I mean, really, the reason why he's Doctor Strange and Sherlock is because he's got that librarian look, man.
He is a little more one note, also.
Oh, he's a good actor. I mean,
he is, but he has less range than McAvoy does. McAvoy can do all sorts of things and feel like all different sorts of characters. Ooh. Benedict Cumberbatch, to me, usually feels like Benedict Cumberbatch.
I do feel, I mean, I can see what you're saying. I think when you really look at the Imitation Game, that
whole different movie.
Yeah, really showed much more of possibilities with him as an actor. But I do agree he very often plays very similar roles.
But that was like 7 years ago. So.
Yeah, I don't think that it's fair to say that he's not good. But McAvoy is a fantastic
I'm not saying he's
guy.
Not good. I'm not saying he's not good.
Yeah, I got it.
Because Craig was kind of one note in that way, too.
That is true.
I agree with that. I do think Craig was a little too serious for most of the movies. Up until the last one, he's finally having fun. I'm like, what the hell? Now you decide to have fun at the end? Man?
I think that's the writing of his character.
I know. Okay, so he moves to the next round. Now we have the listener picks. Okay, so now these are the top two listener choices from our listener poll that we had. Are you guys ready for these two that we get to vote on?
Sure.
So ready.
One should surprise literally no one because it's been talked about forever. Idris Elba. Everybody knows who Luther and Suicide Squad just came out and about 400 other things in the last 10 years. I mean, Idris Elba is an actor with no time to spare on his calendar. He is busy and very charming, very British, and definitely a stud. So I can see why people want Idris Elba. And number two, Tom Hardy. Equally attractive, much more edgy.
Equally?
Yeah, I think Tom Hardy's a good-looking dude. You don't think he's a good-looking dude?
Yeah, but equally.
Okay, Idris might be a better... Okay, Idris is probably a little cooler.
And Idris has some years on him compared to Tom Hardy, but you wouldn't guess it with looking at the two.
That's true. Tom Hardy does look like he's had a rough run of it sometimes.
He does. Yeah. Oh my God, I feel so bad for him.
He does. He does. But he doesn't look bad. And also, I mean, are you judging him mostly from Venom? Because if you see him in interviews, he still looks...
No, I'm not saying he's not a handsome guy, but you said equally as handsome as Idris Elba.
I didn't realize.
I just gotta get clarification.
You're writing a book about this. Okay, got it. So those are the two. Tom Hardy, Mad Max, Venom, you know, he's been a much celebrated favorite as well. So between those two, who do you guys, and this is decided by us three, there's no listener poll here, us three decide which one of these two moves on to the final round. Troy, I want to hear your explanation of who you're going to choose.
I am going to go with Idris Elba, because even though you may disagree, and many of us do, that the Dark Tower film from 2017 was a horrific tragedy on the material.
Whoa.
I think if anybody was to embody the character of Roland Deschain of Gilead, the way that Idris played that role and the way that he used his guns as the gunslinger in that role, and the way he cared and the way he presented the stoicness of Roland, I think that, yeah, Idris is definitely a Bond that could pull it off. He can do Bond pretty well.
Amanda?
Okay, so Tom Hardy is an attractive man. He is. He is a handsome man. But he just is not Idris Elba. I will add that I would like our Bond to be a little bit younger than both of them. Just because if we're going to be doing like 15 years worth of one person acting, they should probably be a little bit younger. He's already getting some gray. He looks good with the gray. Don't get me wrong. He's still my pick. I'm just saying that's why he wasn't my number one, is because he is already almost 50. He doesn't look like it, but he is almost 50. So is he going to want to play that role for another 15 years? Would he, you know, still feel James Bondy in 15 years? Probably. He's a handsome fellow, but I don't know for sure.
But
what if they were to just film it all in like 5 years, like they did Lord of the Rings?
That would be smart.
They're not going to do that. That's never going to happen. Nice try, though.
Never say never.
No, I'm going to say never. It's never going to happen. Even though I should never say never again, I'm going to say it again. Never. So Idris Elba is your pick?
Yeah, he is really charming, and he's got a good body. He's got that perfect accent.
Does talent matter for you?
I was getting there.
Well, it's like 5 minutes you've been talking about Idris, and I haven't heard anything about talent yet.
I was getting there. I was going to say that he's a really long talented road. Actor.
Did you take the Lord of the Rings road?
Did you walk through the desert?
I feel like his delivery of the important James Bond lines would come across so wonderfully because of his accent and his delivery. And he's able to pull off really charming and sweet, but also, I'm going to kill you and I'm going to kill you right now. And it's scary. It's a little intimidating. You get that from The Dark Tower.
Get it. Yeah.
So.
I'm also going with Idris. Not that it matters, but a lot of the same reasons. He's just cool as hell. I do think he's a little too old for the part personally.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that as somebody who's not that far away from him. So I get it. I definitely think he's probably a little too over the part. Which he's alluded to actually recently, but that doesn't matter. We're casting a role whether he wants it or not. So now we've got our Whole South contender. So here we go. You guys ready to get this thing a moving to the finals?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Now, for Whole North, between Luke Evans and Richard Madden, who is your pick, Amanda?
Luke Evans. Not just because he's my own. I think he has all the pieces.
Okay. Troy?
I figured you had to go first because it was your pick and I would be the tiebreaker.
Do you want me to go first? My pick is Richard Madden. And it's not because it's my pick. I honestly think of all of these, he's the best option. If he is immensely talented, he's got the look, he's got another 15, 20 years of playing the role. I like Luke Evans a lot. I don't think he's as fully ranged in this respect as Richard Madden, believe it or not.
It's not a bad call either way.
Just because Amanda picked on me for eating ice cream early in the morning on Facebook today, I'm going to go with Richard Madden.
You know what? I'm going to change my answer. So that way it doesn't even feel like you got back at me. I'm going to go Richard Madden too.
Oh my God. Okay. Richard Madden moves on. That was the weirdest decision I've seen in a long time, but you know what? If she's picking on you for eating ice cream, shame on her. I agree.
It was 7:30 in the morning, and he posted that somebody was delivering him ice cream. As and I was should. Like, what?
Is there a bad time to eat ice cream? No.
It's magical.
No. Why don't you just sit over there in your ivory tower looking down on ugly people and...
What? Did you just call Troy ugly?
No, you. You've been talking about looks that matter way more than everything else. And
oh, no. So I'm one of those ugly people.
She is a misogynist.
All right. So moving on to Ho South. Now we have James McAvoy versus Idris Elba. Oh, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. Troy, you go first.
James specifically because of the age issue. Both would be great.
Ageist.
Sorry. If they're not going to film him over 5 years and they're doing over 15, you got to go with McAvoy. Yep. If you're doing it over 5 years, then yeah, you can. Idris could still pull it off.
Amanda.
The exact same answer.
Wow.
Yeah. Couldn't have said it better.
Yeah. I love Idris. And I'll be honest, up until Suicide Squad, I didn't think he could do it. I just didn't think he had the fun in him, Idris. He was just very serious. Everything I saw him, he's cool as hell, but he's always very serious. And I want a fun Bond again. And so he's great. So it has nothing to do with the age. I just think McAvoy, I'm really looking for more fun in the next Bond. And I think Madden and McAvoy both are, I think they're really good picks for that. So there we go. All right. And that brings us to the finals. Guys, it's up to us to decide who the next James Bond's going to be. And we have two picks, Richard Madden and James McAvoy.
Two white dudes.
Of course. Of course. That's exactly what the tag. Somebody's going to share this with somebody like, they picked, of course they picked a white guy. Damn it.
Yeah.
I love you.
That's all Amanda talked about was how good looking white guys are for the entire episode.
Wow.
What? That's not what I said.
I think she went on about 14 minutes on Idris Elba. I'm just letting
you know.
I sure
did.
Whew. Way longer than Reggae. So, which is kind of weird.
Okay.
Because that was her pick.
Reggae does not have anything on Idris, though. I know that Reggae is closer to my age, but I would still take daddy or granddaddy over here.
Idris. I'll remember the first time I saw him was in, I think it was called Obsessed or something.
Idris?
Yeah. I want to say Beyonce was in it, maybe. I don't remember what the name of the movie was.
Oh, I remember that movie.
He was like a husband who either had an affair or almost had an affair or something like that. And then the woman kept like ruining his life. I think that was the movie.
It was 2009. It was Obsessed with Beyonce. Yes, I remember this movie.
Okay. I just remember seeing that going, man, he's a damn cool ass looking dude and he is good looking. And I don't, straight or not, that's how I felt. And I have felt like that with everything I've seen him in since. So he's definitely got the looks. I get where she's coming from. Now, who's
even
your
with
pick?
His salt and pepper.
I forgot what we were talking about. Oh, McAvoy versus Madden. And you said.
Not Idris.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I got lost in my train of thought. Now I'm, you know. Maybe I am swinging for both teams.
Yeah.
All right. Troy, did you answer? I don't remember anymore. I'm really just thinking about Idris Elba right now.
I'm going to go with McAvoy, only okay. Because, like you said, I want the fun. And I thought just with the split character, that was just him at a whole other level of acting to be able to pull that off. So I think McAvoy definitely takes the cake here.
Did you answer, Amanda?
No, but you can go ahead first.
I'm going to go with James McAvoy. Oh, wait, we're on. Richard Madden versus...
Did you think we were still on Idris versus McAvoy?
I sure did. I got completely confused with what we were doing.
Yeah, keep going. Keep talking. No take backs.
God, I'm so stupid. Okay, so Richard Madden or James McAvoy. I got to be honest, that's a much harder call than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, same.
I have been very... resolute that Richard Madden should be the next Bond, but I can see McAvoy. You know, I'm going to go with Richard Madden though. I really just feel like he's the hang on. It's like chess. I'm still holding the piece.
Go back and watch Wanted in your brain for a minute.
Hang on.
Go back and watch Bodyguard and Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Look at him with that action and the gun in his hand. Pulls
McAvoy
it out.
Is Scottish.
I don't care about that. That's just a silly thing that you have.
Isn't Richard Madden European too?
They're both.
He
just
is also
cool.
Scottish. Yes,
they're both cool. yeah, I'm going. I'm going Richard.
Oh my
Madden.
God, Aaron!
I'm going Richard Madden. Yeah.
So I flipped a virtual coin, and That's the moment when I realized I did have a choice because I assigned heads and tails. And I was like, oh, please land on heads. And I was like, wow, okay, so there's your answer, Amanda. So Richard Madden is my choice. Okay. I would still be so happy if James McAvoy got it, but I'm going to go with Richard Madden.
I got to be honest, Troy, you almost had me with McAvoy. I was pretty close flipping on my own call. I was pretty close. Right? I could see really any of these guys, except Cumberbatch.
Except Cumberbatch.
I'm sorry. No disrespect to him, but I can't see it.
It was Doctor Strange that did him in. Before Doctor Strange, it would have been fine.
How many icons does this guy need?
He just
looks
like a nerd. And there's nothing against nerds, but James Bond just doesn't look like a nerd.
No, you're right. And he shouldn't. You know, nobody's going to... He needs to sleep with women to get secrets, man. That's how you solve world problems.
The only way he can solve
just like a Cumberbatch tenor going shaken, not stirred. And he does the circle thing like he's making the hole for Dr. Strange.
That wouldn't turn me on, though. Like, I've never watched a movie with Benedict Cumberbatch and been like, wow, this sex scene is so hot.
I've never been turned off faster than when he just did the hole. When he throws it like Dr. Strange. Like, I went, I heard the sound in my head. Hey, but whatever turned you on, Troy, that's really what matters, you know? So there you go. Okay, so the winner of our James Bond Battle Royale is Richard Madden. But we're good with McAvoy, too.
Yep.
Okay, now we're going to move into No Time to Die, and we're going to be spoiler open here, okay? We are going to talk it because this is a movie where a lot of things happen. It's the end of the James Bond franchise. So if you don't want to stick around through that, just know that we did like the film. Check it out and then come back and listen to this. Or if you don't mind spoilers, stick around. We're getting there. So there's your warning. No Time to Die. We're in it. James Bond, spoilers are welcome. So once we get in, after I finish this paragraph, we will be ruining the movie for anyone that hasn't seen it. James Bond is enjoying a tranquil life in Jamaica after leaving active service. However, his peace is short-lived as his old CIA friend Felix Leiter shows up and asks him for help. The mission is to rescue a kidnapped scientist, and it turns out to be far more treacherous than expected, leading Bond on the trail of a mysterious villain who's armed with a dangerous new technology. And also, he casts a woman aside really quick in the movie, becomes very important later on. So there you go. That is the gist of the movie. We're going to assume you've already seen the movie, so we're just going to jump into it right now.
And before I depart, I'm going to give you my quick thoughts.
Oh, you are going to depart?
I'm just dying right now.
Okay.
Thinking of Idris Elba.
Yes.
Is it because of your sickness?
Yes, I am down with the sickness.
Okay, fair enough. Go ahead.
I thought there was going to be a lot more Ana de Armas. Really expected more of her and would have liked more of her, but she was fun. I enjoyed the romance and was really annoyed that Bond couldn't just reunite with his woman and daughter, even virtually. It is so, there's the movies about technology. We certainly could have had that happen. He wouldn't have had to die. Kind of made me sad. I cried a whole lot at the ending. Really touched me. I was really sad when Jeffrey Wright died also. Like, that was unexpected. I didn't expect to cry. And overall, I thought it was a fun movie. I enjoyed it. And Rami Malek can do no wrong. He was still good here, even though his face was very destroyed. And his neck was perfectly fine.
Okay, super weird.
I'm so glad somebody else said that.
Really? Did you notice it, too?
I did. It's like, did the burn just like stop because he didn't shave that day and the beard protected the rest of the body?
Was he in a glory hole? He just poked his head through it?
Oh, God.
Just, I don't understand it. How does that happen? It's perfectly symmetrical. That's weird.
I did like the hero-ness or heroics of James Bond, though, where he's like, no, I got to stay here and make sure I got to go back and make sure that this doesn't stay open. So I give it 650 out of 10. It wasn't a perfect movie. It was very long, but I did enjoy it.
The whole ending with him choosing to die because obviously he's poisoned and he doesn't want to get back to his daughter that he didn't know about for 5 years, whatever, and his love of his life. But all I kept thinking of was, couldn't you just buy a pair of gloves? Couldn't you just go pick up some gloves and then Zoom call some people? I don't understand this. Like that, Sure, it's heroic, and I don't think he could have made it out of there anyway. He's got missiles coming, but he could have made an effort, for Christ's sake, and buy some gloves. Never touch the kid. It's not that big a deal. Lots of fathers do it. Jesus.
That sounded very wrong. That sounded very Michael Jackson-ish.
Okay.
Buy some gloves and touch the kid.
Ooh, ooh, hey, hey. That's not what I said. Anybody listening, go back, check the tape. I never said that. And it's time for you to go, right? Aren't you leaving?
Yes.
Okay. Yep.
I thought you were talking more on the angle of, you know, deadbeat dads that divorce.
That's what I was talking about, Troy. You were paying attention. You were not being creepy about this. All right. Thanks, Amanda. Okay, Troy, she is gone. That means it's just you and I, and we can get serious about this, all right? This was Daniel Craig's last foray as James Bond. We don't have to get that serious, but we can talk about more than just how attractive James Bond is. Do you feel like this is a proper swan song for Daniel Craig?
I do, because I think all of the movies were kind of leading up to this movie, and like we had talked about, we definitely saw a lot more of the gizmos and gadgets in this particular one, so it was a way for Craig just to say, like, I'm finally done with this character. Because remember, he wasn't going to come back and play in this movie originally. Like, he literally needed, like, the Brinks truck to back up to his house, like, 1,000 times in order to actually come back for this final sequence. And I really think that in this movie, he had more fun. He was more light. I really liked some of the action sequences that he was involved in, like the motorcycle chase to open up the movie. I think all in all, it was enjoyable. It was fun. It was way too damn long.
It was way long. Almost 3 hours, man. That's long.
I think this could have been great at like 2:10. I think would have been a great runtime for this one. There's a lot they could have just cut out. I think at the end of the day, though, you know, I did not cry at the end because you have to live under, like, I don't know who did not think he was going to die at the end of this movie.
I agree with you. I mean, yeah.
This is the last movie he's going to be in. How else is Bond going to go out?
Well, like, to be fair, Bond never dies in the movies. I don't think he dies in the movies. Only when he faked his death or when they thought he was dead at one point in one of the movies.
Right.
But yeah, he's never died in the movies, not officially.
Yeah, but it wasn't like a tearful, like, oh my gosh, like, because like you said, it's like, just Zoom call, put on some gloves.
I don't understand that one.
You're already on an island now.
That didn't make any damn sense to me. And I think that is probably why I didn't cry either. Like, I mean, I felt it. I mean, I felt it. Ah, well, he's going out like a hero to some respect. I mean, he's saving the world. At least he's going out on a hero moment. But I just felt like that whole angle was so dumb. I get the logistics. You don't want the nanobots to somehow find a way back to their kid or back to the girl. Then go live in Jamaica where you lived by yourself forever again. Or tell them that you're going to die in the missile blast and then, you know, fake your own death and go live on that island so you never have to explain it to whatever. Or just Zoom call them. It's 2021 or whatever year it is in this world. It's got to be 2021 because they show Vespa and she died in 2006 when Casino Royale came out. So their technology is there, man. You could just Skype the kid, for Christ's sake. That one really bothered me. And I think it took a lot of the sting out of that final shot.
Yeah, and I think the problem with it was the fact that it was like the big, like, oh, you're poisoned now, so you can't do it. And it was a miss, I think, because when he sees Dr. Swan for the first time after 5 years in the hallway when he goes to see Blofeld, like, he goes to stick his hand out and she doesn't shake his hand, and I was like, oh snap, like, he's already got the nanobots or whatever they were. What the hell was the thing called? It Heracles?
Heracles, yeah. And it's, yeah. He didn't already have it. He didn't get it until the end.
But you didn't think that. Like, you thought, like, maybe because he was, like, involved earlier in the movie with investigating stuff, like, maybe he got it on his hand. No. So when she didn't reach out, like,
she very clearly had it on her and she didn't want to take a chance of getting him infected. The only reason he got it on his hand is because he touched her. He grabbed her at the end.
So I think that was, it just didn't have the same punch. Like when Rami Malek opens up his hand and shows the vial, it's like, really? That's where we're going?
I mean, okay. I thought it was, like, I did like that angle. I just didn't like that as an excuse to basically give up. You know, I just felt like that's not, I know a lot of people thought it was heroic. They loved it to death. I thought it wasn't very James Bondy. Because James Bond is always a forward thinker and he's always ahead of the game. And I could figure out a different plan where I could still see my kid even from afar. Apparently he just, I'm already shot. What am I going to do? Already gut shot. Ain't much risking it.
But there's a lot of good too in the movie. Like when she gets great. On the train.
I really like this movie a lot. Like yeah. I'm just saying like, I did not cry at that moment. Although I still felt it. I still felt like this is how Daniel Craig's Bond is going out. He's going out. He's still going out a hero. I still don't think he could have made it with the missiles coming. So he still saved the world and he gets to go out a hero. I just could have done without that aspect of it to give him one more reason to do it that way. You know, I just didn't need that.
Yeah. Because I really liked in the opening when she gets on the train and he sends her away.
Oh, yeah.
How she like reaches down and touches her stomach. Mm-hmm. Like it's so subtle that a lot of people probably missed it.
Oh, I caught it. Because
they're focused on her eyes.
I caught right? it. Makes me really not like Madeline. I'm like, man, mm-hmm. 5 years, but she probably couldn't find him too.
Could be.
Yeah. She probably couldn't find him. And he's the one that cast her.
But she did lie to him. When they're in the house that she grew up in as a kid and she was like, oh, don't worry. She's not yours.
Yeah. But that was also 5 years later. I mean, and he threw her out basically. He just didn't trust her. He didn't believe her. I don't know. That's trickier. I mean, I feel like he overreacted pretty quick on that. That was really, some of that's Bond's fault, some of that's her fault. They both suck as parents. How about that? But I really did like this as Daniel Craig's last movie. I thought at least they gave him a full range of things to play with, and he did get to kind of evolve into a little bit of the fun Bond here and there. I really loved his scenes with Ana de Armas as Palomo. I'll get to her in a second, but a lot of characters did return only to get waxed, like Felix, Blofeld. How did you feel about all the returning characters? Anybody really stand out? You got Madeline as well as M and Q too.
Yeah. I mean the usual suspects that you have around the office, I'm totally fine to see them back.
Moneypenny.
Blofeld coming back, I thought was the interesting one. Like I wasn't expecting to have him return and be, I guess, pseudo integral in the movie and in the way that he was. Mm-hmm. Felix is just great to see. Like I'll watch Jeffrey Wright read the paper, you know, Jeffrey Wright is just amazing in everything he does. So, to see him die, I didn't cry on that one either.
That would hit me though, because I didn't think that was going to happen.
Yeah. I was hoping that we were going to see him more in the movie, more like a partner sidekick, you know, kind of feel to it. But yeah, I think it was good to see how it all tied together because I didn't really think that Vesper Lynn would actually be back in some form in the way that they tied her in and then have the bomb go off. Like we were watching it in AMC Prime and when the bomb went out, like did not expect it at all. Like,
mm-hmm. That was great.
Shock.
Yep.
And so I thought that was really cool. The part of the issues then though is that like you don't realize he is wearing a bulletproof vest the entire time. So that's why the concussion didn't harm him from the explosion. But it's just like, there's just a lot of times he's being shot at in this movie. And it's like, okay, he's standing in the wide open and these guys can't hit him. Yeah. Is it stormtroopers that are the bad guys? Like,
clear I don't line of sight. Here. Yep.
Yeah. Especially on the bridge before he like jumps off the bridge with the cord. Like he should have died 100 times on that bridge.
It makes me wonder if he was intentionally trying to miss him and just trying to drive him so they could kill her. You know what I mean? Maybe. It's the only explanation to me, because otherwise it's pretty ridiculous. But they seemed like they were trying really hard to kill him.
But the motorcycle chase sequence, that was freaking cool.
That was fun. Like
just riding the ridge on top and you're going as fast as you are. And then that cool part where he like goes up the ramp and then like hang times in the air and then comes back down. I literally was like, ooh, in the theater.
Oh, everybody like, in the theater, ooh, that was really neat. That was a cool moment. Yep, for sure.
Cool moment.
I was happy to see Blofeld back. Felix really kind of hit me in the gut when he died. I didn't cry, but you know, I don't cry. But Blofeld, it was interesting. I mean, you kind of saw it coming once he grabbed her arm that he was going to be he was going to kill him. I felt like that was easily foreseen. But it still was pretty impactful. You know, I thought that was an interesting way that they handled his character. I didn't quite get the carrying his eyeball around on a pillow. That was really weird for any movie, let alone a Bond movie, but whatever. But still, I was glad that he was back because I think he does a really good job with that role.
I was wondering for a while if his little henchman that was in the motorcycle chase, if him and Blofeld shared eyeballs. That's one thing I was wondering about.
It was a weird thing because you got all these guys running around with these eyeballs, and Christoph Waltz is just, I mean, I guess that's, he had an eyeball that he could dictate orders through, I guess.
Just make it a web camera. It doesn't have to be an eyeball.
It was weird. It was a weird way to try to explain how he set up this whole Spectre situation, which ended up being a mass assassination reversed. But still, I just thought that was odd. But anyway, moving on to the newer characters, you have Paloma, Ana de Armas' character, and Lashana Lynch's Nomi, who's the new 007, even gets the number. And then they have a lot of banter about the number. What'd you think about these new ass kickers? They were, you know, much to Amanda's point earlier, yes, they're beautiful, but that isn't all they did. They were kicking ass.
Yeah, and Paloma, I think on the first side, she almost was playing it off like she was kind of flaky, and then she like comes into it as they start to do the shootout in the casino.
Yeah,
the bar.
She's playing naive, and then you come to find out, oh yeah, 3 weeks training my ass.
Yeah. So I think there was fun with those characters. I love the extra 007. It was probably a little over the top of the whole, like, it's just a number. Oh, let's give him his designation back. You know, it was a little bit like the writing was showing in that moment.
Overwrought.
Hint at stuff. Mm-hmm. So it was just, didn't necessarily need to call it out as much as they did. It was good, though. I loved it all the way through.
Yeah, I was so bummed. I mean, Nomi got plenty of screen time. I mean, Lashana Lynch got a lot of screen time. She really got a fully fledged character. I feel like Paloma is the character everybody I've talked to wanted more of. She was fun. She was fun from start to finish. She still kicked ass. She was a complete opposite of a normal Bond girl. You know, she wasn't just there to look pretty. She was entertaining. She was energetic. She was fun. She's a little, you know, uncomfortable, which was great because you're so used to seeing these badass spies just being smooth as everything. And she's just like goofy almost to an extent. I really loved her character. I really wanted more of her. And I was bummed. As soon as he left Cuba and she's never to be seen again, all I kept thinking was, I hope she pops up. I hope she pops up here. I hope she pops up there. I hope she pops up anywhere, and never does.
And she was in Knives Out, if I remember correctly, right?
Yep, she was.
Yeah.
Great up-and-comer. She's going to play Marilyn Monroe next, which will be interesting. Ooh,
that would be good.
Rami Malek. Now, I know Amanda really loved him as Safin, whichever it was. I thought the motives were a little odd because he ended up basically wanting to kill millions by the end of it. So he turns into a megalomaniac, of course. Typical Bond villain, that works. I really was kind of, I thought he was a great villain for the first half. And then I think once his plan got, I don't know,
exposed,
it just got a little ridiculous in many respects. And why he's keeping her and the kid, I felt was quite a stretch. Although I did like the moment where he's like, if you don't like it, go, and the kid leaves. I thought that was great. That was a fun moment. But overall, I thought his end motivations made little sense.
Yeah, I think he was an interesting, like, what is his angle? What's his purpose up until the point that the kid and her show up, and then like they're walking through that little, you know, Japanese suicide death garden. Mm-hmm. And when he's holding the kid and just like stroking her hair, I'm just like, yeah, dude, I'm just not feeling it. I don't know if it's the face makeup. I don't know if it's just speech pattern. Like, I'm just not feeling like you're that sinister. Like, I could just come over there and like flick you in the nose and you'd fall over.
Yeah, but I did. I mean,
especially because the kid walks away from him and he's like, oh, whatever. I don't care. Like what?
I mean,
what?
I did like that moment though. He's just like, go fend for yourself. Go fend for yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love the opening. I thought the opening was really well done. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out the math because she was like 10. So he was, I guess he's like 10 years older than her then.
10, 20 years maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. But
15.
You know, it worked. And is it Matilde was his daughter's name? What did you think of his daughter? What do you think of the idea of James Bond having a daughter? Didn't know about her for 5 years. And then basically gave up everything to save her life.
I think it adds something to the character. Definitely a dimension of
sure.
Him trying to resolve like you know, as we talk about in the military, right? Duty Corps, God Country, and all that fun stuff. So I think it's that kind of thing where it's like, are you going to put your personal motivations ahead of the job? And this gave him something to play with in order to make that decision at the end of the movie where he's like, no, I have to finish the job. I have to open these blast doors back up. I have to get, you know, down there and make sure that this sees its way through, even if that's at the sacrifice of what I love, which is my kid, and my baby mama. And yeah, I think it really gave the character something to do. Not so thrilled with the child actor choice. I thought a little awkward, maybe.
No, she was fine. She had beautiful eyes, which really kind of pop with Daniel Craig, which right. they made references to.
But yeah, all in all, yeah, I thought it was an interesting twist, even though it was like completely... The problem with the movie that I have and why I wasn't like crying at the end was because everything was telegraphed. There wasn't anything that was a surprise.
Nothing.
Well, not really.
Because you kind of expected him to die, which I did too, even though he didn't
expect him after he killed Blofeld, because he's got the nanites or whatever on him from being at the Spectre Club when the Spectre people die, and he's obviously Spectre. It's like, oh, well, basically he's going to kill the kid or he's going to kill. So it's like you already have the planted in your seed, like this is going to be the thing that's going to cause the issue is this, you know, nanobot virus that he has on his person. So like that, the seed has been planted like an hour before it actually comes to fruition. So you might not know exactly how it's going to play out, but the thought's been planted. So it's not a shock when it happens at the end.
Well, I had the back and forth. Are they going to kill him? It really feels like they're going to kill him in this movie. It would make sense, but I've never seen him kill a James Bond. So I can't see them killing a James Bond. And then, you know, then you get people saying, make sure you see it before there's any spoilers. And as soon as anybody ever tells you that, you're like, oh, they're going to kill him.
Oh, and somebody obviously dies.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's just your natural gut reaction. But I didn't have that problem. I like the daughter added. I wish he would have had a chance to be a father. I feel like that's kind of cheap for the character. I would have preferred he was with her for 5 years and then got pulled into it because of this guy. I mean, you still have Madeline as a reference point to draw him back into it. Makes it
a personal vendetta.
Yes, yeah, exactly. You don't have to kill her, but you can put her in danger, and that's why he's got to go after him or something, or gets back in the game. I would much rather that was the angle than he didn't know he had a kid for 5 years. It's the same thing Superman Returns did when, you know, where Lois had a kid and didn't tell Superman for a long period of time. I don't like that story dynamic. I think it's cheap and it kind of takes me out of the game. It makes me not like a certain character because it makes me not like Madeline. And I shouldn't have to not like Madeline because she's a wounded person. But I just don't like that aspect. As a dad, I don't like it. It bugs me.
Yeah, but it's like hard to understand, like, too, because with Madeline, even when she shows back up with Rami Malek towards the, like, when they show up with him the first time, I'm still questioning Madeline's loyalties. Like, is she loyal to Rami Malek's character, Safin? Because, like, there was this bond where he saved her life and then let her live.
I like that angle.
Yeah, it was really, I didn't know how to read Madeline for most of the movie.
Which is good. It played into, you know, what they wanted you to feel like, which
but
I,
then
I
it,
dug.
But then it never, like, came to anything.
Yeah.
It was like, she just was the damsel in distress the whole time. And it was kind of like, well, that's kind of a waste. Like, you built this up.
You're hoping for a little twist where she had some part in it.
Yeah, or where she's the one that actually bests the bad guy, and then she ends up dying or something, and Bond has to watch her die because she makes the ultimate sacrifice or something. And he's like, oh, I should have trusted her the whole time. And then he would have been broken because of that.
Mm. Oh, what if she made the ultimate sacrifice, but also he had the nanobots in his system so he could never touch his kid, and he had to raise her?
Yeah.
But he could still buy some gloves, and I bet you he could do it.
But that tragedy, I think, would be a great way to not kill a Bond, but kill a Bond at the same time.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, he's already just fractured and broken. And right. he was starting to, I don't know, lighten up. He was starting to really seem more alive and beginning to trust again and beginning to love again and beginning to be more of a full human being. So it was, I was hoping he would get that nice closure. I mean, you kind of want a happy ending for a character you've been following for 50 years plus, you know?
But it is cool watching him standing there looking up at the sky and seeing those missiles open up. It was like, that was a cool cinematic shot.
That was a beautiful shot. Absolutely. Okay. So Bond gives up his life to ensure his daughter and Madeline live. That's how it ended. Any other big pluses in the movie? in terms of that you really enjoyed? I really love the set pieces. I feel like all the action scenes were great. And I really dug the Paloma scene, just not just because she was there, but I really dug the whole where they start turning on him. It reminded me of Spectre, which is my favorite moment in Spectre, where he breaks into this private meeting and then, you know, Blofeld directly looks at Bond and he's like, what took you so long? And it had a nice little throwback to that. I really love that. I thought that was great. When Spectre gets killed, basically the same way that Bond even found out about him.
Yep. Agree. No, I mean, the issue I have is that it was just so long.
No, I'm not talking negatives, Mr. Negative.
Oh.
Positives. What are the pluses? What did you love or like about it?
Oh, I did all my positives. I really liked the opening sequence. I think even the opening credits, I think, was really good. Billie Eilish, the song was really good. The Variety article that we found, I thought was really the most interesting thing about the movie, was the throwback to...
We Have All the Time in the World?
Yeah.
With the throwback to Honor Majesty's Secret Service?
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was really cool. And then didn't even realize that it was the Louis Armstrong version that was playing over the end credits. So I think there was just a lot of care taken with the movie in respecting the franchise, mm-hmm. and also understanding that they've set up enough that they could basically take the franchise anywhere they want to go, really, going forward, because a Bond has never died on screen. And Bond is just a, you know, Bond is Bond, but 007 is just a designation. So like, there's a lot of seeds that they've planted that they could do a lot of interesting things with it going forward.
They could. I don't think they're going to. They've said that they're not going to. That could always change. Sure. I mean, it depends on the response to those characters and whatnot. But I don't see that happening. You know, there's a lot of, even though you keep bringing up the length, right? Which I agree with you, it's too long. I don't think it should have been cut. You know, by your estimates, a whole half hour, but you could get it down to 2.5 hours. And I think you have a much tighter movie, because I didn't feel like it was dragging at any point. I mean, I was invested through the whole movie, but there were definitely scenes where I'm like, they could have cut that down. They could have cut that down. That was a little lengthy. It started to feel a little bit like director Cary Fukunaga was very much too in love with some of the things that were on screen and couldn't let them go when they really weren't necessary. But there's a lot of great scenes in here. Like, there's a lot of the Blofeld murder is great. A lot of the ending is really interesting. The scene with Paloma is wonderful. The opening car chase, you know, a lot of that stuff all works really well.
Yeah. A lot of the issue is the end. Cause I think when I got to maybe 30 minutes to go is when I looked at my watch and I was just like, I looked at my watch, because it was just that whole facility and the pools of water and the biohazard suits and people are standing in the biohazard. Like what is the thing in the, are the plants toxic? Or is the water toxic? Like what's going on here? Like, I'm confused.
It was creating a weapon. And apparently none of them realized that it was very dangerous. Cause when they all see one person die in it, they all run away. Like, oh God, I didn't know I could do that. You've been here the whole time. Nobody's ever died
wearing a hazmat suit. Like, why do you think you're wearing the hazmat suit in the first place?
What's the shock for?
That just the whole sequence there, like when they get to that island and then just, it's all so drawn out from that point forward, like just get to the point.
It's called No Time to Die. You got all the time in the world. Literally, you have almost 3 hours. There are a lot of connections to previous Bond movies in here, which I thought was really nice. I mean, and all of his movies too. There's a direct connection to almost every one of his previous films.
Correct. And then I think the best though was Lashana Lynch when Nomi has the guy up on the catwalk and he's like, you know what time it is? Time to die. Like, she got the quip in too, because she's technically a 007 ish at that point. So
yeah,
that was funny.
I love when he has Logan, was it Logan Ash, and trapped in the car, and he's just like, Felix was my brother. And that's, I love that moment, because I thought for a second he's like, I had a brother or whatever. They're talking about brothers. And I just thought, because Blofeld kept referencing that he feels like Bond is his brother, but you never heard Bond say that. And it felt really good. Like, not just that he got revenge, but it felt good that he said that to me.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, even though Blofeld and him were raised together, they were never brothers.
Right.
So for him to identify Felix as his brother, I thought was good.
Yeah, it was really, really nice and warm and refreshing and loving. And that was a great scene. That whole chase in the middle of the woods and whatnot, that was a really fun set piece.
And I think it was like one camera shot the whole time. Like, and it was pivoting around and like,
oh, that was the staircase on the island. That was a stairwell on the island. That was a one shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. It might've been in the forest too. I don't remember that one for sure.
I just remember him like spinning around, like, where's the next guy coming from? And then where's the next guy coming from? And then he runs to the tree. And then the Jeep gets tipped over the tree.
Yeah. Yeah.
It all looked like one camera shot. And it was like, wow, that's just really cool.
Well, a stairwell on the island was definitely like one shot. Cause I mean, he goes up that whole stairwell into the control room and it's like, whoa, that was impressive. Cause that's a lot of choreography he had to learn.
Yeah.
That was well done. Well done, Bond. Well done. Anything else on No Time to Die?
No, I think it's definitely worth a watch. If you've seen all the Craig movies, you definitely should go see this one and just, make sure you go to the bathroom ahead of time and don't get the large water.
Just bring a catheter.
Yeah.
Oh, we got it. And I enjoyed it too. If $10 full price of admission, what do you give No Time to Die?
Solid 7.
Exact. Yep. Right on the button for Matt.
Yeah.
It might grow on me more as I get over the whole why did anybody buy gloves thing. I think it might hit me a little bit better.
Yeah. I mean, there's the throwbacks and the nostalgia and the things that they did like could make it a 750, but the ending concept was just like, really? Really?
Okay. We had a disagreement on the quip. I thought the quip was hysterical.
His mind was blown.
Yeah. He like short circuits the dude's eyeball, Blofeld's eyeball or whatever. You didn't find that as funny as I did.
I don't know if it was just the way it looked like he laughed at his own joke before he said the joke.
He did.
I think that's what it was.
That's why it was so good.
I was like, just deliver the line and then laugh. But it's like the fact that he laughed at it before he delivered it. I was like, no. Oh my God.
To me,
did we really go there?
That's when Craig was fully embracing the more cheesy aspects of Bond. That was his moment. And I freaking love that. I'm like, no, he's not. Because everybody in the movie knew he was going to say something around those lines. And he did. I'm like, yes. Thank God. He lightened up.
Literally from an electric shock.
Oh, man. Well, you know what? That's going to do it for this episode of The Hollywood Outsider. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Remember, you can rate us and subscribe on your preferred podcast app. Troy and I will be back very soon on the Blacklist Exposed podcast. If you follow the Blacklist, so be checking that out soon. You can also find him at Troy Heinrich. You can find Amanda at Sink Into This and on Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirk. And I'm on Presenting Hitchcock, which is going to have Rear Window up next, which is my favorite movie of all time. So that's it. Remember, the next time you head to a theater to see No Time to Die, buy popcorn. It'll blow your mind.
Bring a catheter.